We're glad to have you all here today. We're going to be hearing some testimony from both sides, the UPS side and the pilot's side. And but before that, before we get started, we have a little bit of housekeeping to do. So first of all, let the record show that the House Transportation Committee started at 9:12, and also reflect that the following members were present: Representative Johnson, Representative Johansson, Representative Peterson, Representative Gruenberg, our committee members, and myself, Wilson. And we have Senator Davis is here with us, and Representative Tuck. And online, members from the committee are Representative Munoz and Representative Tammy Wilson. And we do have other people online, and I would like to go through that. We have available for questions is Dan Wayne with Ledge Legal. Also, Gray Mitchell and Paul Escobar are with the Department of Labor. They're online and for any questions that someone might have. And also, we have Representative Anna Faircloth and Representative Hawker. Their staff is online. And and Representative Millett is online also. So. And is there anyone else online that I haven't mentioned? Doesn't show it. So, and we are expecting Representative Lynn to join us a little bit later. I would like to recognize the staff today. Chris Jones is the Senate Recording Secretary in Juneau, and my committee aide is Becky Rooney. If anyone has any questions that they I think we talked about this before, but if there's any questions, you need to send up, send them to my aide. So before we start, I would like to at least tell you that we turn off your cell phones, please, and turn them all the way off. Just turning them to vibrate could still interfere with the recording system. And we're meeting here today to provide a venue to look into the furlough of Anchorage employees of United Parcel Service. The goal of this meeting is to hear from all involved parties and determine if the state has any role in this labor issue. I would like to start off by saying I know this is a very emotional issue for many people, and it's not my intent to take sides at all. We're going to listen to this and see what everyone has to say, and see if we indeed do have a place to as legislators. We're going to hear first from the state of Alaska, the manager of the Ted Stevens International Airport, John Parrott. He will provide us with a few comments and then be here for questions that might come up later. And we also invite the Department of Labor to speak, but they have declined, and will be available online to answer the questions. Also, the Department of Law is available and for questions. So then we will hear from the Independence Pilots Association. So first of all, let's have John Parrott come forward.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Hi, this is Kathy Munoz calling from Juneau. Could you let the record show that I will be listening in on this meeting, please?
Yes, we already announced that you would be there.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, John, go ahead and give us your testimony. And what we're going to do, as we go along, if there's any questions, I encourage the committee to raise their hand, and we will ask questions as we go along today.
Certainly. My testimony here will be, my prepared remarks will be fairly brief. First of all, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity, Madam Chair. My name is John Parrott, and I am the manager of the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. The airport has 68 land leases, 14 terminal leases, 14 concession agreements, and 38 airline operating agreements and permits. UPS is one of those 38 air carriers, a signatory carrier with both an operating agreement and land leases. Businesses at the airport pay the appropriate rates and fees to conduct their operations at the airport. As long as the business is conducted in accordance with pertinent agreement, the airport does not insert itself into their business. The airport is a state agency and implements state policies and procedures as directed. The airport does not interpret law or set state labor policy. United Parcel Service pays the same land rent and landing fees per 1,000 pounds of certified maximum gross takeoff weight as our other airline customers. To the best of my knowledge, UPS has been treated the same as all our customers. Whenever possible, we do attempt to work with our customers to facilitate their businesses within the guidelines of the rules and regulations, which include the FAA grant assurances and the Alaska Administrative Code Title 17. Having said that, I'd like to thank you again for this opportunity, and I'm available to answer any questions the committee might have.
Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Groomberg.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Parent. Has UPS made application for any more spaces?
No, sir, not at this time.
Yeah, I was told that they had or were going to.
I'm not aware of...
Four or five more?
No, sir, I do know that they have made inquiries as to whether or not the airport would have parking spaces available in case they had broken aircraft, and that would not be specific space for them. That would just be, do we have parking spaces available at the times they might need them for broken aircraft. Other than that, I haven't been privy to any inquiries about additional space.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess I could sum this up by saying you don't have a dog in this fight?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, yes, sir.
So the state and the airport is, we just don't have any, there's nothing there for us, except from your perspective.
Through the chair, yes, sir. As the airport manager, my responsibility is to administer the airport in accordance with the rules and regulations without using or in some cases hopefully even having a personal opinion on who may be right or who may be wrong or what the best thing for folks is. My purview is to administer the airport in accordance with the rules and regulations.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Groenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Parrott, when are the operating agreements and land leases up with UPS for renewal?
I'm not certain of the land leases. I'm fairly certain that's a long time in the future because some of those have 30, 40, 55-year terms. The operating agreement with all the air carriers, all the signatory air carriers, expires June 30th of 2013.
Okay.
Follow-up, Representative Groomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there anything in any of those agreements that deals with the situation we have here involving furloughs and things like that?
Through the chair, no, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. I have a question, John. When UPS came aboard, you know, on board at the airport, were they given any special perks or anything like that to encourage them to come here?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. All right. Representative Lynn has snuck in. I didn't even see him until all at once I look, and there he is. So. Seeing no more questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, the Department of Transportation. You have any questions that are any comments? Okay, the Department of Transportation has no comments.
Madam Chair.
Representative Groenberg.
If I may ask a misrepresented question.
That'll teach you.
Through the chair, my name is Mary Sirocki, and I'm the special assistant to the commissioner and the legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Representative Groenberg, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You heard Mr. Parrott's answer a minute ago. Would your answers be any different, or do you want to add anything to what he said in answer to our members' questions?
Through the chair, Representative Groenberg, now I think Mr. Parrott did an excellent job of portraying the department and the airport's position.
Thank you. That was my only question.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. All right. Well, let's get down to business then and hear what we all are here for. And so we'll hear the Independent Pilots Association. Their representatives have prepared a statement. And so would you come forward and give us your testimony? State your name and your affiliation, please.
My name is Robert Thrush. I'm president of the Independent Pilots Association.
And my name is William Trent. I'm general counsel of the Independent Pilots Association.
Okay, gentlemen, proceed with proceed with your testimony, and we may stop you several times for questions.
Madam Chair, members of the House Transportation Committee, and members of the Alaskan Legislature, thank you for the opportunity to appear before this committee, and I thank you for your efforts to identify the impact of the UPS pilot furlough on the state of Alaska, on our pilots, and on their families. My name is Robert Thrush. I'm president of the Independent Pilots Association. We're the collective bargaining unit for the 2,800 men and women who fly 214 UPS large jet aircraft. I'm a UPS A300 Airbus captain with 21 years of experience flying for this airline. Last week, UPS announced that it was reducing the number of furloughed pilots by 70, from 300 to 230. While this is good news for those 70 pilots and their families, it does little to reduce the economic impact of the furlough on Anchorage and nothing to restore UPS's broken commitments to this city or to our pilot group, particularly given that this furlough never had to happen. The economic impact of the UPS pilot furlough on Anchorage is still severe. More than $39.5 million in lost payroll and unemployment benefits through the year 2014. Setting aside the economic issues, it's important to note that since 1988, when this airline was established, every single UPS pilot was told on their first day of new hire training, tear up your resume. This is the last job you will ever have or you will ever need. Well, it was this commitment from UPS that led 155 UPS pilots and their families to move to Alaska after the Anchorage domicile was opened in the fall of 2006. The pilots all relied on UPS's century-long commitment to its employees that if you worked hard and you made sacrifices for this company, UPS would take care of you, and they take care of you for the rest of your career. Unfortunately, for 58 of these Anchorage pilots who took UPS at its word, their relocation to Anchorage and to the state of Alaska was a one-way ticket. While UPS reneged on the commitments to its pilots, UPS has also reneged on its commitment to the state of Alaska. Instead of creating a pilot base in Anchorage where its employees can live, work, and raise their families, UPS has created a commuter domicile that currently has 541 total pilots, but only 140 resident pilots, or about 26% of the pilots assigned to the Anchorage domicile, which is down from 33% in February before this furlough started, when the domicile's commuter to resident ratio was 505 to 167. And what makes the furlough truly unfortunate is it never had to happen. The 2,800 UPS pilots had, since April of 2009, preserved all these jobs through voluntary cost-cutting measures. The pilot group took it upon themselves to give up pay and benefits to produce more than $117 million in guaranteed savings for UPS, enough to keep 300 pilots employed well into the year 2011. Under this voluntary job protection program, UPS pilots were able to generate cost savings for UPS by 1, taking reductions in flight pay guarantee, 2, taking unpaid leaves of absence, 3, participating in job sharing, 4, taking military leave, 5, contributing their unused sick leave, sick bank time, or 6, taking early retirements. This all came to a crashing halt on January 11th of this year. UPS pulled a bait and switch. They told the pilots they now needed $245 million in savings through the year 2015, and that his preference was for compulsory savings, in other words, furloughs. But while the pilots were taken aback by UPS almost doubling its original request and tacking on an additional 4 years, our pilot group didn't flinch. We were more than willing to step up to extend and expand our voluntary job protection program to cover UPS's demands and to keep these 300 pilots employed. On February 8th, however, within days of UPS CEO Scott Davis declaring, quote, "Looks like the recession is finally over," end quote, UPS told our pilot group it was unwilling to continue with voluntary savings programs and they would not consider others. They issued a press release and they began the furlough process. Ironically, I started my testimony before this committee talking about broken commitments to the city of Anchorage and to our pilot group. Last Saturday, UPS celebrated its 103rd birthday with the theme 103 Years of Promises. Well, we congratulate our company on this historic milestone and the enterprising spirit of Jim Casey and Claude Ryan, who founded UPS. Jim Casey once said, "You cannot be successful entirely through your own efforts. All of us, if we are to accomplish anything worthwhile, we'll do it largely through the help and the cooperation of the people who work with us. We must help others to help us." Well, as you can tell from Jim Casey's words and what you've learned at this hearing today, the UPS of yesteryear is not the UPS of today. Somewhere along the path of the past 103 years, Jim Casey's and Claude Ryan's original dream for its customers and for its employees has faded. While it may seem that IPA and UPS are on different sides of the fence, sometimes, like today, we are. However, please make no mistake, every member of the IPA is very proud to be called a UPS pilot. We believe in the professionalism we provide every day, making sure that packages and letters are delivered on time around the world. For over 20 years, we have proven our dedication, our loyalty, and our commitment to our customers. And to that, we have never wavered. In the UPS Founders Day message, the company states, quote, "Our success is not measured by industry accolades or milestones. It's measured by the achievements of our customers and the accomplishments of our employees. It's their success that we celebrate during Founders Day," end quote. Well, if only this were true, I wouldn't be sitting here before you today. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, there are 58 Alaskan pilots and their families that don't feel very successful right now. There are 58 Alaskan pilots and their families that feel betrayed by an employer that they once trusted with their future. And there are 58 UPS pilots and families who sincerely thank you for bringing this issue to the attention of the people of the great state of Alaska. Thank you.
Does the committee have any questions? Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In an effort for the UPS company to save money, to cut back, have there been any reductions in other flight crew other than pilots? How about mechanics, ground crew, company clerks, other UPS employees, non-flying types? Have they tried to cut back anyplace else?
To my knowledge, they have laid off mechanics. There are approximately 120 laid off right now. I can't speak for other people in the company and other...
Are any of those mechanics domiciled in Alaska, or are they outside somewhere?
Through the chair, I can't tell you whether they are or not. I don't have specifics on where they're based or not based.
Thank you.
Representative Lynn, when UPS comes up, mark that, and we'll ask that question.
Very good.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Representative Wilson from North Pole.
Yes.
I had a couple questions. They were talking about 58 pilot jobs that were going to be lost. Are those going to be replaced with other pilots, or are those jobs completely gone?
Through the chair, the jobs are going to be replaced by other pilots coming up from the lower 48 that are most senior, but we don't believe that very few of them will move to the state of Alaska.
Follow up, ma'am?
Representative Wilson, follow up.
Do you believe that they're not going to move to Anchorage because maybe they don't know how long they would be here, or what do you think the reason would be?
Through the chair, I believe that based on right now the uncertainty of what's going to happen with the Anchorage domicile, what's going on here, whether these furloughs are going to last or not, would make a difference. Pilots could be up here a very short period of time and then get moved to another domicile if UPS decides to, you know, move other pilots, or if they decide to expand or contract the domicile. We just don't know what's going on. And in light of the fact that, you know, we've had 58 of these people make this commitment and now basically are stuck here with no way to get back to the lower 48, I just, you know, our belief is that the majority of the pilots that are going to be in here are not going to move up here until there's some more certainty.
And I have one last question.
Follow-up, Representative.
And what do you believe that the state of Alaska can legally do between, because this to me seems like it's more of a labor agreement with UPS versus a state issue. What do you think we can do?
Well, through the chair, I hope that you can look into the other opportunities for us to reach some type of an agreement with UPS that would prevent this.
Thank you.
Representative Lynn.
Thank you. Madam Chair, while you are on furlough in an attempt to pay your bills and so on, your family bills, is it possible for you to get the temporary pilot assignments with other airlines, other carriers, any other flying job whatsoever, or are you stuck?
Through the Chair, it is possible, although I can tell you in the industry right now, there, because of what's happening with our major competitors, and other major cargo operators throughout, who are all right now buying new aircraft, expanding and hiring, most are very reluctant to hire our pilots because they feel that this furlough is more of a political thing than an actual need for UPS to do, and they don't want guys coming to work there and leaving in the next 12 months or 18 months when they paid to train them and get them ready to go, and then they have to retrain new pilots because there is a large expense involved.
Thank you.
So, Representative Johansson.
Thank you. You mentioned your speculation that this was a political decision by UPS. What are they gaining by this? What is the political posturing that they're doing that caused this action in your opinion?
Through the chair, what I said is I believe this is what other airlines are telling our pilots when they are trying to apply for jobs or get interviews.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Johansson.
I believe I heard you correctly. You're saying that the other pilots are telling you it's a political decision because you said it was a political decision.
Through the chair, other companies that would be hiring pilots right now are telling our pilots that. That's what I'm hearing back from our pilots, that these other companies have been telling them.
Follow-up, Representative Johansson.
That it's a political decision.
They believe that, yes.
And Madam Chair, if I may follow, and you have no inkling as to what the end game is? I mean, who are they trying to leverage, I guess, is my question.
Through the chair, well, I believe they're trying to leverage us.
I have a question. Have they broken any negotiated contracts at all? I mean, because you said they play, you
through the
used
chair,
the word switch and bait.
Madam Chair, no, they have not, no specific contract language in our collective bargaining agreement, no.
Thank you. Representative Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Thrush, I was just wondering if some of these furlough pilots might have a hard time maintaining their current flight status and capability. Aren't they required to have a minimum number of hours in over a period of time to continue to be able to fly?
Through the chair. Well, what they're required to have is 3 takeoffs and landings every 90 days to maintain currency and proficiency in the aircraft that they are currently operating. If they were to move to another airline, if they were to have an opportunity for a job, that airline would train them and get them current before they could go operate. If they were here, they would have to come into training here. If they went past that and get some training here in the simulator or in the aircraft, to get that currency before they could go out and operate again.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 8, 2010,
from the IPA list server, there was a document, a one-page document, entitled Executive Board Response to UPS Furlough Announcement, Fellow IPA Crew Members. And if you need, I can give you a copy. I see Mr. Trent nodding. You're familiar with that, too. Paragraph 2 talks about the board spending thousands of man hours in efforts to find cost savings that would provide an alternative to the company furlough plan, and that the membership stepped up and voluntarily provided cost savings of $136 million. And then I'd like to quote a sentence with the chair's permission. Quote, the company continued to imply they were looking for contract concessions to which your executive board was unwilling to agree. Would you please tell us what you meant in that sentence? What were the contract concessions the company was looking for, and why was the e-board unwilling to agree?
Through the chair to Representative Grunberg. Sir, the contract concessions, essentially the company handed us a list of fixed, permanent things that would affect our contract directly, hourly rates, guaranteed trip rig, guarantees for each month of pay, retirement, the amount of money we received for retirement. I believe there were 9 items on the list that would affect 100% of all the pilots here moving forward, approximately a year prior to our next contract negotiation. Those were things that we would have to renegotiate and get back. Our position was, if we could generate the cost savings required with the voluntary programs that weren't permanent and affecting 100% of all our members, why would we need to give contract concessions? The company told us from the very beginning they didn't want a furlough and they just were looking for a certain amount of cost savings. We felt very positive that we could provide those cost savings through voluntary means, and there was no reason to do a contract concession. And we believe basically they were trying to force us into that, and we wouldn't agree with them.
If I may follow up.
Follow up, Representative Grunberg.
So what you're saying is that the company said we'll furlough you unless you agree to renegotiate your contract before it's up, correct?
Through the chair, I don't believe they use those specific words, but essentially what they told us, if we were unwilling to agree to those fixed cost savings and involve contract concessions, they would furlough.
And I'm going to ask Mr. Trent for the legal implications of that. It's been a long time since I took labor law in law school. As a divorce lawyer, family lawyer, I don't know much about it, but I'll look for you guys to enlighten me, if I may continue.
Representative Grunberg.
In a press release that was dated also the same date, February 8, entitled UPS Starts Pilot Furlough Process, Dateline Louisville, the press release says, UPS today announced plans to furlough at least 300 of its airline pilots, but at the same time continued its efforts to find a solution with the pilots union that would avert or mitigate the layoffs before they take effect. And that's a quote. What were the efforts they made to try to find a solution? Anything other than the efforts you have described, which would have involved renegotiating 9 issues in your contract? Was that what they were referring to, or did they do anything else to try to find a solution?
Through the chair to Representative Grunberg, to my knowledge, sir, they never presented us with anything other than those original 9. In fact, after that day, we have had no talks of any substance about averting this furlough, about doing anything other than just continuing the furlough with the company. They haven't suggested anything other than those 9 items or talked about anything or been willing to address anything else. We have come up with several things that we've tried to present to them, and they've emphatically told us they weren't interested.
May I follow up, please?
Follow up, Representative Grunberg.
You said in your testimony a moment ago when I think it was Representative Johnson asked, or somebody asked, what can the legislature do? Your response was, the legislature can, quote, help us reach an agreement. I'm not sure if that's an accurate quote. That's what my notes say. Was that what you said, and if so, what did you mean?
Through the chair, I don't remember exactly what I said, but what I meant was, of course, Alaska can look at this from the perspective of what it's actually going to cost the state versus the commitment that was made, and try perhaps to influence UPS to come back and talk to us about other ways of resolving this issue without continuing this furlough.
May I please follow up?
Follow up, Representative Groenberg.
How can we do that? Let me ask you, have you had mediation? Would mediation help? And if so, who can best effectuate that? Let's be frank. What do you want? How can we help?
Through the chair, we have not had mediation. I don't know if mediation could help or not. I believe we look at it from the perspective of, I'm sure UPS coming in here gets some type of incentives and tax breaks and things like that. But if a lot of that is overridden by the fact that Alaska has to bear some cost for this, a significant amount of cost for this, because of the fact that the majority of these people that are going to be affected are actually based here and are going to have a direct effect on the Alaskan economy, I would think that there is some manner that this committee could influence the company.
I see. If I may, please. I understand, and I can assure you that we will explore that when the management comes up. Is would any kind of mediation help in this matter?
Through the chair, Representative Groenberg, I think we are totally optional.
Identify yourself, please.
I'm sorry. I'm William Trent, General Counsel of the Independent Pilots Association. I think we're open to any idea. I mean, and I think Captain Thrush has gone through a short history of what's gone on up to this point. I'm going to go into that a little bit in more detail, but certainly we would like to avoid these furloughs, and we're open to any ideas.
Maybe I should wait until you testify, but the legislature is good as a reactive institution. We're not necessarily as good proactive, and I'd like to hear from both sides what your suggestions. Do you have any other specific suggestions that maybe we can use this forum to advance and try to bring the sides together or something?
I think the most important thing that we're doing today, and the most important thing you're doing, and we appreciate that opportunity, is fact-finding. When this announcement was made, you know, back in February, I don't think really a lot of people in Alaska, in Anchorage, had an idea of the economic impact. I think it was on page 17 of the newspaper at that point. And I think your efforts and the efforts of some other lawmakers in the state are really going to bring out the facts here, and we think that's a very useful process.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say that from my personal perspective, this is highly unusual and very disconcerting to me to even have this discussion. I'm not the chair has the prerogative to hold meetings on whatever she wants. I know it's important to Anchorage and some of the folks sitting on this panel. I feel highly uncomfortable having discussions about contract negotiations and what the state can do to maybe make one side feel a little better or have a little better positioning. When we do contracts with state employees, we don't get in the middle of it at all. And I just want to put it on the record. I'm highly uncomfortable with the conversation that's going on here today, and I won't say it's inappropriate, it's not my place, but I wouldn't have a hearing on it. We haven't even got a mediation, and we're talking about things the state can do to make an agreement get together. Frankly, I think it's none of my business. But that's just one legislator up here, and so I'm not going to muck things up by getting in the middle of it and asking a whole bunch of obvious questions. I'm going to let the people who probably know more about this than I do and want their questions answered. So I'm just going to sit back, and keep my mouth shut, and listen. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I may have been one of the driving forces in this meeting, and I, too, am uncomfortable with labor negotiations like Representative Johansson. But I was frustrated with the dueling math the numbers being tossed around by both sides, and the main purpose, in my opinion, in this meeting is a fact-finding mission for us to put everything on the table so that everyone knows. I would hope that no one would come and be disingenuous with this committee. I think that would be ill-advised or inaccurate with their numbers. That would be ill-advised for anyone to do in front of a legislative body. And I think that if we can get the facts on the table and everyone knows where everyone's coming from, this will be a successful meeting. Whether or not the legislature can do anything, I personally would be hesitant to step in the middle of this as a legislator. I don't think that's our role. I think this is a business decision. And so for the record, also, I want to know that this is a fact-finding mission, which the legislature does all the time and will continue to do. And we want everything on the table. We have press here. They're going to be able to discern. There will be no winners and losers out of this meeting. There will just be information on the table that hopefully everyone can deal with in an open, clear, and transparent way, which seems to be a very popular term in this state these days. So that's my purpose for this meeting. I am almost certain there's nothing the legislature can do about it. But we can shed light on it, and we can give everyone an opportunity to vent in what I think is probably the most neutral agenda you will ever face. I don't think anyone here is has got an axe to grind. We want the information, and that's, in my opinion, the purpose of this meeting. Whether or not we can do anything, that's down the road and for the future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I do want it to be clear that I had the meeting because my vice chairman wanted the meeting, and it's as a courtesy to him we're having this meeting. But it is a fact-finding meeting. I said that in the beginning. And so Representative Tuck, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the opportunity to hear what the situation is. And maybe the state doesn't have anything to do with these labor negotiations, but I think that this does impact our community and does impact our state. I can't help but to feel a little panicked. And I hear the panic in the voice of the testimony that we just heard just now as a result of 155 families moving to the state of Alaska, showing and demonstrating their loyalty, and then having that loyalty not being a two-way street. So maybe the state of Alaska can't do anything about this, but one of the things that can be expressed, and I'd like to express it here now, is a disappointment and seeing that families are being furloughed. Just looking at the audience right now, we have, it looks like to me, people that are standing ready, willing to serve, and standing at attention. I mean, this is a good group of employees right here that I see. And just out of curiosity, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, I'd like to ask and see with a show of hands how many people are going to be potentially losing their jobs with this decision.
About half of them. Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Madam Chair, I have another question.
Representative Wilson. Tammy Wilson.
Yes. Thank you. I guess I'm in the same place for Representative Johansson. I think we are starting a precedent that we just really don't belong in. But I guess my question is, I come from a background. My husband worked for a steel mill for 30 years. I know what to be one of the new people as well as one of the senior. Don't these junior pilots go in knowing that as times change and economics change, that there is a possibility that they could lose their job?
Captain Thrush, do you want to answer that?
Through the chair, absolutely they do. The difference here is we came to work for an airline that had never done this before, and as I stated earlier, they told us all to tear up our resume, that this was the last job we'd ever have or need, essentially making a commitment to us the first day we came to work here. When people are willing to uproot their families and leave extended family and all that, and Anchorage is pretty far away from most things in the lower 48, if that's where you've grown up and you've raised your families and have extended families, and to make that kind of a commitment and come up here and be up here a couple of years and then have that pulled out from under you, it's pretty significant.
Follow up,
Representative Wilson.
So do you believe that UPS was being sincere at the time when they said to tear up your resume and truly believe that if all the stars aligned and economics stayed well, you know, stayed good, that they would be able to keep that commitment?
Through the chair, yes, I believe that. And I think one difference here, if I heard something you alluded to, I believe you said your father or husband worked in a steel mill. One difference here is our pilot group was willing to step up and provide them with all the money and cost savings if given the time and opportunity that they're going to save through the furlough anyway. When they started this, they told us they were absolutely certain they were going to furlough at least 300 for at least 6 years through the end of 2015. And it's been 6 months, a little over 6 months since this started, and they've already reduced the furlough numbers by more than 23%.
I would assume you should be very happy about that.
We are happy about that. But
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We also did a lot of those concessions, and then we found the steel mill to go bankrupt after other things and concessions were made that never got made up. But I guess my last question just is, you know, don't you believe that it's UPS's right as a business to do what they feel is best for their bottom dollar?
Through the chair, we do believe that.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just hope that all of these witnesses will remain around in case we have further follow-up questions after we hear from the UPS. But with that...
I don't think anyone's going anywhere.
It looks, from some of the people who came up on the elevator, I think they had just come off their plane. They had their bags. Anyway, Madam Chair, with your permission, it sounds like before these furloughs started, the folks in the IPA had very deep trust of the union and very good, not the union, the company, very good relations, and the company's word was its bond. Since they've done these furloughs, how has that affected the union members' confidence in the company's word, and how will that affect their bargaining position in the future and their dealings with management?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Grunberg, what you said is correct. And I would say, just based on my experience, knowing these individuals and having dealt with them as a chairman of one of the committees and now as a president, that this was probably the bottom 300 employees, 400, probably the most loyal group of pilots in the entire Independent Pilots Association toward the company. They loved being here. They would, you know, do just about anything the company asked them to do. And moving forward, obviously, they don't feel that way now. They've pretty much to a man have let me know that moving forward, they don't feel that way. They would never grant any favors or go out of their way to do anything over and above what the contract requires from this point forward because they feel like the company betrayed them.
Thank you.
And I do want to make a comment about our overall economy in the United States right now. And I know there's 300 here, or not here, but 300 that possibly could lose their jobs. But overall in the United States, we've had more than 1 million people lose their jobs. So these times are different times than what we're used to dealing with. And the recession is affecting a lot of people. So I have a question because you had an agreement with the company, and you were trying to meet a deadline. How did you do on that? Did you meet your deadline?
Madam Chair, I've got a lot of details on that. If you
okay, why don't we just proceed then, and you can give your testimony, and then maybe that'll answer a lot of the questions. Okay, that's fine. And Bill Trent is.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Bill Trent. I'm general counsel with Independent Pilots Association. Madam Chairman, members of the House Transportation Committee, members of the legislature and staff, thank you for the opportunity to appear before this committee. We appreciate that. The Independent Pilots Association is keenly aware that each of you is focused on the health and well-being of the citizens of Alaska. That's why we're here. And what I have to say to you today is that the pilot furlough initiated by UPS was 100% avoidable. Alaska has a dog in this fight because the pilot furlough will unnecessarily remove millions of dollars from the local economy. You're right to be concerned, and we appreciate the committee's diligence in examining this issue. And let me start by again introducing myself. As I said, I'm Bill Trent, counsel for the union. I want you to know I've served in that position as chief counsel for the union since the UPS Pilot Group was founded in 1909. So I've been around a while. I've been involved in every substantive discussion and negotiation between the pilots and UPS during that time. I've literally been in the room as the primary legal advisor representing the pilots over the full course of every agreement that we've ever negotiated with UPS. And there have been many, many agreements that we've negotiated with UPS. The pilots and UPS have negotiated three major contracts. Those milestone contracts were reached in 1991, 1998, and again in 2006. In addition to those major milestone agreements, the Independent Pilots Association has literally negotiated with the company and concluded hundreds of different supplemental agreements over the course of those years. The airline has grown during that period of time from a handful of pilots flying primarily in the lower 48 to a robust international operation of now more than 2,800 pilots flying all over the world. Communities such as Anchorage and the state of Alaska have certainly benefited from this growth. Overall, the relationship between UPS and its pilots has been remarkable and has made this progress possible. The pilots understand that our success is linked to the success of UPS. We get that. UPS also understands that the strength of its airline is absolutely linked to the professionalism and skill of its pilots. From time to time, we have had sharp differences, and I think you should know, in our last round of negotiations, UPS formally proposed outsourcing the lion's share of international flying to cheaper foreign competitors who base their pilots abroad. If UPS had had its way in those 2006 negotiations, there most likely would have never been a pilot base at all in Anchorage, Alaska, or in the state of Alaska, and no UPS pilots would likely live here now. I find it ironic that we are at odds over the precise economic impact now of the current pilot layoffs on Alaska's economy. The impact would certainly have been devastating had the pilots not stood up to UPS on this issue in the last round of bargaining. However, when we work together, UPS and its pilots form a winning team. This has directly benefited the state of Alaska. Often, we've seen other airline managements at other companies pitted in bitter labor disputes with their pilot employees, and where sometimes that's happened, instead we have found creative ways to work with each other. In fact, we were the first major airline to negotiate a new contract using the principles of win-win or interest-based bargaining. The National Mediation Board has held our 2006 negotiations up to the industry as a model. Our usual cooperative solving approach, however, was severely tested with the world financial crisis or Great Recession that began in late 2008. In February of 2009, UPS approached us with a request that the pilots provide the company with $131 million in total cost savings through the end of 2011. Even though UPS remained highly profitable and maintains one of the strongest balance sheets of any large corporation in America, we were told that all employee groups should make sacrifices in order to control costs. And while we didn't like hearing some of the details of what our contribution should be, it struck us as a reasonable belt-tightening exercise. We want our company to be successful. The company at that time suggested that we raise this money by agreeing to some combination of wage and pension cuts to generate that money. Well, we were just curious if everyone's contributing company-wide. We were curious as to the how the $131 million figure, how that had been determined. We were told that while UPS had no interest in furloughing pilots, the company felt that it could forcibly generate savings from the pilot group in that amount, the $131 million, by laying off 300 pilots through the end of 2011. Again, I think it's important for me to restate that. We were told in early 2009, at the depths of the recession, we hope that's the depth, it's been the depth so far, we were told flat out that UPS had no interest in furloughing pilots. In fact, the UPS executives that we dealt with stated that they wanted to avoid a furlough so that the company would have an adequate number of pilots trained and at the ready if the business climate improved. This was termed operational flexibility. UPS, we were told, wanted the operational flexibility of having all hands on deck, all pilots on board. But if we could not generate the $131 million by the end of 2011, we were told that UPS was nevertheless prepared to lay off 300 of our most junior pilots, the same pilots who were just hired in 2007, most of whom are based in Anchorage, and many of whom moved here in order to take those jobs. As that February of 2009 meeting ended, UPS and IPA agreed on two things. First, we agreed that a furlough was not in the interest of either UPS or its pilots. We both agreed on that. Second, we agreed to commence discussions on March the 11th, 2009, to see if we could devise an acceptable approach to coming up with savings, the number that UPS wanted, in order to protect our pilots from layoff. That was certainly our objective. In the spirit of win-win bargaining, the pilot group proposed a method of generating the savings requested by UPS. We proposed a series of voluntary income reduction programs to include short and long non-paid leaves, job sharing, reduced work schedules for reduced pay, early retirement, and the option to allow pilots to donate, just give back, some or all of their accumulated sick leave directly to the company. We developed these concepts jointly, and we named the program together the Voluntary Jobs Protection Program. On April 29, 2009, UPS and IPA reached a formal agreement on offering the Jobs Protection Program to the pilots. And against incredible odds, it worked. Following the first sign-up period that ended in May, the pilots generated $88.5 million in voluntary savings as a down payment on the $131 million goal. Now, both sides were elated. In a joint press release, UPS Airlines President Bob Leekhuis praised the pilots' leadership and said the effort showed, quote, how a company and its union can work together to achieve a mutually beneficial outcome, close quote.
Even though they didn't, at that point in time, even though you hadn't reached the goal?
Correct. Okay. But we had reached $88.5 million, and again, we were looking for savings through the end of 2011, so at this point, you know, we're still in 2009, so we had time remaining. And Mr. Leekhuis, president of the airline, went on to applaud, quote, applaud the pilots for making the voluntary commitments necessary to help protect the business and UPS jobs in an uncertain economy. That's what President Leekhuis said. And so what we did is we weren't content to rest with that $8.5 million. We scheduled jointly a second sign-up period for the end of 2009. In early January this year, at the close of that second sign-up period, the pilots voluntarily added another $30 million in guaranteed savings to UPS's bottom line. More than 2,100 of 2,800 pilots voluntarily elected to reduce their own pay in order to save the jobs of their 300 fellow junior pilots.
So did this reach the goal then?
Well, we were 93% of the way there. We locked in.
Wasn't reached yet, but
right.
You were working on it.
Correct. And this was at the beginning of 2010. At that point, we had reached, I know the figure 117 was thrown out. We actually refined that a little bit, and the final figure we had was 121.5. So of the 130, we had reached 121.5. or 93% of UPS's original goal of $131 million. Now, with an additional opportunity in late 2010, pilot leaders were confident that we could meet or exceed, we actually thought we could exceed, the total goal of the $131 million by the end of 2011. We didn't really think that would be a problem. We thought we would be elated again. But now there's a twist to the plan, which again underscores why Alaska has a dog in this fight, why you should care. In December, before the second sign-up period even ended, we didn't even know about the $30 million. We didn't know what we were raising at that point. UPS suddenly raised the ante from $131 million to $245 million. Well, what was their rationale? Remember the furlough that neither side wanted? UPS now said that they could theoretically extend the hypothetical furlough, the one they never wanted in the first place, all the way to the end of 2015. And of course, now they're saying this in December of 2009, which is not at the trough of the recession. It's when the CEO is saying, hey, you know, things are getting a little bit better. Now, to prevent them from conducting the furlough, this hypothetical furlough, to the end of 2015, UPS stated, and the one they said they never wanted in the first place, the pilot group would have to generate not $131 million, but now nearly $250 million.
But they gave you extra time to do that, right?
They
How
said
many
they
more
would.
Years?
Well, they. They said those they could furlough all the way to the end of 2015. So
that added how many years?
Well, it added 12, 13, 14, 15, yeah. And by this time, the pilots felt betrayed. They felt like they were doing their part. They had, in good faith, stepped up and met 93% of the company's initial goal with plenty of time to capture the remaining 100%. Said another way, we felt a little bit like Charlie Brown having the football snatched away by Lucy just as we're getting ready to kick. To add insult to injury, UPS suggested that it be allowed to keep all of the savings that we had just generated from the voluntary jobs preservation program. They said, hey, let's just let us keep that. But
let us conduct a, quote, partial furlough of, quote, some number of pilots, and we were never given the number. We asked that we give us a number. We emphatically said no. We said it's all or nothing. We had persuaded more than three-quarters of our members to voluntarily reduce their pay, all based on the promise that if they did, there would be no furlough. Many who had sacrificed the most were in the bottom 300 slated for furlough. Would we now turn around and allow some of those same individuals who had voluntarily reduced their salaries, voluntarily gave money back, voluntarily gave up their sick leave, just contributed that to the company, now just all of a sudden be tossed on the street with no severance pay, no relocation expenses? No. The deal was this. We would raise the money we had been asked for by UPS, but in return, not a single pilot would lose his or her job, not a single family would be financially ruined, not a single family would be forcibly uprooted from their community, many here in Anchorage. A deal is a deal. We said no to a partial furlough. We said yes to completing our end of the bargain by holding another sign-up round in late 2010. And I know it's a long story. I was there for every step of it, and I'll try to wrap this up quickly. We stated that if the company truly needed to save that $245 million through the end of 2015, that we would, in fact, commit ourselves to that goal. We offered to extend the voluntary job protection program from the end of 2011 through the end of 2015. We would, for the first time, give pilots the opportunity to volunteer for unpaid time off in 2012, 13, 14, and 15, all to help boost and achieve the extra savings the company now said that it required. UPS said no. The pilots would be given no opportunity to generate guaranteed savings for those additional years. We also made other proposals, such as extending and enhancing early retirement opportunities that could have saved millions. Again, we were told no. As a last-ditch effort to save these jobs, while still generating the new savings that UPS said it now required, we took the following approach. We said, okay, just keep the savings that we've locked in, that we've guaranteed through the end of 2011, and postpone your furlough decision. Just postpone it until 2012. If the company eventually decided they still needed to furlough, we prepared calculations that demonstrated that UPS could take our guaranteed voluntary savings through the end of 2011, and then, assessing the economy at that time, if absolutely necessary, combine that with a furlough starting in 2012 through the end of 2015. Now, if you add those two pots of money up, the pot that we generated voluntarily through the end of 11 and the pot of money that could have been generated through a furlough starting in 2012 through 15, then it roughly equals the $250 million we were being asked for. UPS was not interested. By this time, we were told that senior UPS executives had decided on the immediate furlough option. We received notice on February 8, 2010, that UPS was withdrawing from the voluntary jobs preservation program and opting instead for forced pilot layoffs. Of course, now, under the microscope of public scrutiny here in Alaska, the story is changing. Now the furlough of 300 pilots that UPS was so confident, so insistent, would last through the end of 2015 has been revised. It's good news, of course, that the number has been reduced from 300 to 230. But when we hear spin coming from some UPS officials, we know better. committee is right to hold these hearings. Alaska will benefit from the attention and scrutiny you are paying to this issue. We appreciate the support we've received from the Alaskan public and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. Thank you, and we'll be available for your questions.
Senator Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Trent, would you tell me what you mean about the spin? At the bottom of your statement, you stated that you were glad that they revised the number, but when you heard the spin, what was the spin?
Well, we've been hearing things second and third hand, but what we've heard is that, the pilots were not willing, you know, to avoid this furlough. They could have accepted a smaller number of people going out on furlough. They could have accepted a partial furlough. I think I've explained the background of why that was unacceptable to us. If you just hear the sound bite, it makes us sound very unreasonable. I think if you hear the whole story, you can make your own decision.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I want to caution everyone when we're talking here. We want facts. We're not going to make any accusations or anything. We just want to talk about facts. And you have been doing that. Thank you.
I could go the other way.
Yeah, we know you can.
Innuendos. But I won't. Is Mr. Leikaitis still the president?
Mr. Leikaitis is still the president, yeah. And I have a lot of respect for him. We've done a lot of work together through the years.
They've asked the employees, specifically the pilots, to do a lot of cost cutting and give up their salary. Has management taken any similar steps to limit their salary or benefits?
Well, when we were through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that's a very good question. When we were at the very depths of the recession, you know, there, January, February of 2009, UPS absolutely did that. They deferred some of their own management 401k contributions. They took some steps to tighten their belt, and they were coming to us and saying, hey, you know, you guys need to do the same thing, and that's why we were cooperative with that. Since that time, because the economy has improved somewhat, we all know that's very tentative. UPS's business block hours, as they measure it, has come back quite a bit. They've now suspended those management. They've reinstated their 401k contributions. At the very time, they're coming back asking us for a higher number. So that piece we don't understand.
So in other words, through the chair.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they're asking you to make sacrifices, and they're no longer willing to make sacrifices themselves. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think through the chair, those specific programs that I talked about, specifically the 401k match, has been reinstated for the management employees.
How about the salaries? Did management
through the chair, I'd like to answer that and correct that. They have not reinstated 401k matching. What they have, it's Robert Thrush, president of the Independent Pilots Association. They have not reinstated the 401k matching. They have reinstated management incentive pay, bonuses. In fact, when the CEO did the fourth quarter announcement and made the statement that he believed we were out of the recession, when Scott Davis made that statement, at that same time when he was interviewed, he said that he was going to reinstate management pay raises, bonuses, incentive pays. I do not recall them saying that they were reinstating 401k, nor do I believe they reinstated it up to this point. But they have reinstated their incentive pay bonuses and pay raises.
And I may have been wrong on that point. I apologize.
That's all right. If I may pursue.
Follow up, Representative Grunberg.
I'm going to ask the UPS folks to follow up specifically on that point with facts and figures, and with the chair's permission to provide us, if necessary, in writing, what the history has been, whether they have continued to maintain some of their benefits while asking the employees not to do so.
Well, through the
I'll
chair,
ask you if you wanted to provide any further incentive information through with the chair's permission.
Through the chair, certainly UPS is more knowledgeable of what they're providing to their management employees than I am.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? So I just want to make sure I understand. The UPS came to you guys and said, we're kind of tightening our belts here. Recession is hitting us, and we're all in this together. And asked you to come up with 130 or 131 million, whatever the number is, and that had to be a pledge by your pilots. So when you say you had plenty of time, the pledges kind of had to be a little bit in the future so that they would know. Am I correct in assuming that?
I think you're absolutely correct, Chairman Wilson. I mean, what we were looking at is if they were going to run a furlough, which was their plan B, then it would take them a period of time. And I think, you know, we discussed this earlier about they can't just put all 300 down the street on one day. There's more to it than that. There's a lot of training that's involved, and even the furlough that we're seeing now, it's metered. There's so many per month, you know, that go out. And so by the very nature of conducting a furlough, there would almost be over time, almost like a bell curve, where you would gradually put people out, there would be a peak, and then those people would be gradually brought back on. So if UPS were going to run a furlough through 2011 or 2015, by the very nature of that, the savings would be stretched out through that period of time. What we were saying is that with our voluntary program, we could actually provide them more front-loaded savings, not just, everything I've been talking about so far is just dollar to dollar, but we actually pointed out that we can get you a lot more savings up front than you could if you do this furlough methodology. So to answer your question, when we say through the end of 2011 that we had time, we felt like that we did that because their plan B would have taken them. They could not have gotten the immediate savings day one by conducting a furlough.
So the amount of money that they were hoping the pilots would be able to come up with wasn't reached by the deadline, and so they extended the deadline, and it wasn't reached by the next deadline, and so they extended it again, and it still wasn't reached. And by then they had
there were two sign-up periods. You're correct. I mean, and by the end of the second sign-up period, which was the end of last year, December 31st of 2009, we had raised 93% of what the company said that they wanted.
And by then, though, they kind of really needed to know that ahead before then, but they were giving you extra time to get the amount that you were hoping you would be able to get.
Well, correct. I think everything, I think the proof is in the press release after the first round of signups in April. I mean, we did not reach the full $131 million, but that didn't stop both sides from being elated by the results and for President Leacock making the strong statements that he made that the program was successful.
So at that time, when the goal hadn't been reached for the second time, they probably were having to make some decisions company-wide, and is that when they changed the number and extended it for a few more years?
You know, I only know what we were told. What we were told was that the situation has worsened, which, again, we found odd because the lower number was at the very depth of the recession, you know, early 2009. We're being told the end of 2009, when there's kind of the first green shoots, you know, the economy's coming back, the CEO statement that, you know, hey, maybe we're out of this recession. At that very time is when we get a doubling of what we're being asked to contribute.
And so what I've just said, though, is factual. I just want to make sure I've got it in my mind. So these are the facts so far up to this point.
Factual, just exactly what I have said from my perspective is absolutely factual and truthful. I was there through all of these talks. I'm not getting them secondhand.
Okay. Are there any more questions at all for
just one?
Representative Gruenberg.
follow up the chair's question. As I understand it, after you were 93% of the way there, management said, we want you to do more layoffs, more furloughs. So it wasn't just completing the 93%, the other 7%, but they wanted a lot more. Is that right?
Well, through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I mean, what's interesting is before we even knew that we were 93% there, they actually, before that December of last year sign-up period ended, we started getting the comments that the number was going to be raised and it was going to be higher.
But they didn't specify how, just as you said in here.
They
said a significant number, but they didn't give you how many. Wasn't that what you said in your written statement?
Through the chair, they did give us a specific number.
Some number of pilots. I'm quoting from page 3, third paragraph from the bottom.
Yeah, that's where the partial furlough. When they came to us in December of last year and they said that the number was raising, what they were basing that on, because we asked, I mean, we were just dying of curiosity. We want to know, how did you come up with $245 million? And they said, okay, we can actually, theoretically, this furlough that we never wanted to do, we can stretch it out to 2015. If we did that, we'd save a lot more money. And so, ergo, we want you to save, you know, and to keep us from doing that, we want you to save us that higher amount, that $245 million. We said, look, you do not need to be doing that. I mean, we've got all these employees. They're valuable people for you, valuable people that you put a lot of training in. We've together mutually agreed to go down this path of no furloughs in exchange for voluntary savings. If you're going to raise the number, if you're going to do that, then basic fairness would indicate that you at least give us an opportunity to meet that goal. You at least allow us to, in 2012, 13, 14, 15, to allow our members the opportunity to take time, unpaid time off in order to generate that money. Give us the opportunity. If we can't do it, then that's one thing. But we believe that we could. At the end of 2009, again, we've met 93% of the original goal that was through the end of 2011. I mean, we had plenty of time remaining on the clock, we felt, to meet really both goals.
Thank you, Governor.
So what you wanted UPS to do, I'm just trying to figure out where you guys were coming from. Their request was $130 million by a certain date. You didn't come up with that, so it was extended. By that date, you didn't come up with it, so it was extended. By then, if they have, I'm thinking as a business person,
right?
I'm not going to, if we've extended it and we've not, then, of course, if it's going to be a longer time, of course there has to be more money involved because we're going in a longer time. So I can understand that. You guys wanted to not do that.
Could I respond to one thing?
Yes, yes. I want to hear where you're
saying. You know, and I understand the, and I'm sure you're going to hear from the other side, well, you know, these guys are, they're not meeting the goal, so we're going to do what we want to do. Okay, let's just even go there. Let's take that. What we said is, okay, take the savings that you know about, the savings that are locked in, the 93%, put that in your back pocket. Now, instead of putting the state of Alaska and the community of Anchorage and the UPS filing group through this trauma of a furlough, take what we've already done, although it's 93% of a fairly arbitrary number, take that and delay your furlough decision. And if you feel like you, as a, you know, we all believe in capitalism, we believe the company needs to be able to run its business to stay successful. If you believe that you need more money, then delay that furlough decision until 2012, and you can get it. You can get it. And we gave them charts and graphs, calculations that were very detailed that showed that they could get there.
Right. I think we need to hear the other side. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just clarification, I think you heard you say that you offered UPS some pretty quick savings right away by taking immediate action and actually taking concessions right away. Is that correct?
Well, in the sense that under this voluntary program, you would have people immediately going out, like on half pay, generating savings, whereas if they were going to do Plan B, a furlough, that would be slower to kick in because it would take time to get people out on the street. So one of the quote-unquote selling points that we were, you know, pitching to the company is that you can make a lot more money up front if you'll go with this voluntary savings program. You can put that money, you know, in your pocket real fast. And then again, if you don't feel like you've gotten enough at the end of the day, because they did insist on an out clause. If the economy got worse, that they could withdraw from the agreement. And again, we did not want to be unreasonable. We gave them that opportunity.
Captain
Thrush, president of the IPA, through the chair to Representative Tuck. One thing I would like to point out is your analogy, your analysis there is right on. And the fact is, through 9 months, the company generated savings that exceeded $57 million, with $48 million for 2009 and about $8 million to $9 million in the first 3 months of 2010, and they would have had to furlough all 300 pilots. They would have had to been off the property and been out the door for more than a year, almost 15 months, to see that same amount of savings. They got that money all up front, and then they furloughed anyway. And that's a real issue with us. They took the money and kept it, and then they furloughed anyway. And they got almost $57 million, which would have been over a year of furlough protection. We were only 9 months into this agreement, and it would have taken them well over a year to furlough all these people. So they got huge savings up front. So it's not like on the back end, they couldn't have waited a few more months and had another sign-up period and still not come out ahead on this deal. So it didn't seem to work both ways.
So you guys, from what I hear you're saying, you guys gave up a lot, but UPS didn't benefit from that at all.
Madam Chair, no, UPS benefited hugely.
And so when you gave that, is that hypothetical or is that real?
That was real.
Okay, so of the whatever you had raised at that point, about how much of it then you guys feel that you gave it, but you got nothing in return. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we kept the potential furloughees on the property for about 10, 11 months. But as we were talking earlier, there's a time frame that goes on here. They can't just put 300 people out the door. I mean, they started these furloughs in May, and to date we only have 109 out the door right now. They're talking about not even getting to 230 until well into next year. So you can see that there's a process that goes along to get to that point. That money was all front-loaded for them, that $57 million. They got that. They kept that. And we didn't see the equal return for the amount of money that we gave.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going
to
be nice.
Representative Johansson.
She said I had to be nice. And I may have missed this. I stepped out for a minute, or you may have went over it at the very beginning. But is your group, is it an association? Is it a union? Can you just describe, is it a collective bargaining? Is that what you're involved in? Do your members pay dues monthly to be represented by? Can you just explain how the association, I'm unfamiliar with the pilots group.
Right. Airlines are regulated under a law called the Railway Labor Act, and under that act, you can be organized, employee groups can engage in collective bargaining. The IPA, Independent Pilots Association, was selected by the employees by an overwhelming majority to be the collective bargaining organization for the UPS pilots. That's the only group we represent in 1990, and we have represented the pilots as exclusive bargaining agent for the pilot since that time.
Follow-up, Representative Johansson.
So pilots pay, Can you call it a union, or is it like a union? I mean, I don't know if that's a legal term or whatever.
It is absolutely a union. Okay. The name of our group is the Independent Pilots Association. The dues are determined by vote of the membership.
Okay, and
follow-up?
I think that answers my question. Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Trent, your testimony smacks of some kind of a contract and a potential breach of that contract, that agreement, the addendum where you entered into this voluntary plan. And then part of the consideration for the association doing this was that there would be no furloughs for at least a period of time, and a breach by the company, by the management, and at least a detrimental reliance in contracts 101
right.
term.
Right.
Been a long time since I had that.
I think we had the same course, but no, I think we had the same course, but through the chair, Representative Grunberg. The company, when we were negotiating, basically, we'll give you savings, you give us protection from furlough. That was basically the quid pro quo. Absolutely. The company said, look, we're doing this deal, we're specifying $131 million. It's very legal, but we want an out. We want an out because we have no idea, you know, if there's going to be another Lehman Brothers that's going to go bankrupt and what the world situation is going to be in terms of package volume, and we want an out. If we decide, the company, if we want to withdraw from the MOU, we want to be able to do that. And so we agreed to do that, so that was part of the contract.
Then what did you actually receive? Was it not, in terms of contracts 101, an illusory contract and no contract at all?
I don't think it was, through the chair, an illusory contract. I think we did receive an additional 9-10 months of protection from furlough that we would not otherwise have had. I mean, what we were being challenged with was an immediate furlough in early 2009, and that was delayed. It was delayed because we were operating under the auspices of this agreement, the memorandum of understanding, where we were engaged in a process. We were engaged in a process of raising $131 million.
If I may follow up, please.
Follow up, Representative Grunberg.
They had an out that if we, being the management, felt that we needed to furlough, we can do so. Were there any expressed or implied conditions on whether when that option could be exercised?
Through the chair, yes, we've linked it to a deterioration, you know, in the economy.
But I thought, if I may, that they said that the recession was no longer at the level that required it.
Through the chair, I think what we were hearing was some dissonance. I mean, we were hearing, a CEO talking to shareholders, you know, trying to pump up the share price, and we were hearing the people that we were dealing with on the local level saying something different. So we were hearing two different things.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, and we appreciate your testimony. And what we're going to do now is we're going to take a short break before we hear from the other side. So I'm going to say we've got...
do we have a copy of it?
Not that long. No. About, I'd say 10 till we will start in.
I have to.
Give you one with this.
Adjournment, not adjournment, but we're back from recess. And please, if you're going to be speaking, please, can you just leave the room if you're going to continue talking? All right. Now we will have Next on the agenda is Captain Rick Barr, Vice President of UPS Flight Operations, and he's worked for UPS for 22 years. And also, Scott Casey is the second person that is available, and if I understand right, you're going to do most of the talking, Captain, and Scott's going to be kind of more for questions. Am I?
We'll tag team it up here.
Okay, great. Well, would you just go ahead and start your testimony, and we'll listen and have questions along the way.
Bet. Good morning. Once again, I'm Captain Rick Barr, Madam Chair. I am Vice President of Flight Operations, and in that capacity, I've been in this role since 1997. So many of the negotiations that were talked about earlier, I have quite a bit of knowledge on. And sitting next to me is, once again, is Scott Casey. He's Vice President of Public Affairs and Legal. Let me say on behalf of UPS that I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Johnson, and members of the Transportation Committee and other Alaska officials here today for this opportunity to speak to the facts about UPS and the Alaskan economy. I'd also like to thank the Alaska Department of Labor for their services as we've implemented the furlough. They've been very instrumental in helping some of our furloughees. And the Department of Transportation for their many years of partnership in helping us grow Alaskans for many years. I guess last but not least, I would like to recognize the flight crew back here and the families that took it upon themselves to come out here and hear what is being said today. So thank you. I'd like to take the next few minutes to address the committee with some prepared remarks, then we would be happy to answer any questions you may have. My comments this morning will focus on three areas: UPS in Alaska, the reasons behind our pilot furlough, and I'd also like to correct some of the inaccuracies and misleading public claims made recently about the UPS furlough. First, UPS in Alaska. UPS is certainly good for Alaska. The facts overwhelmingly support this. UPS has over 1,000 employees in Alaska, and our annual payroll is $108 million, and we are one of the state's largest employers. In addition, beyond our payroll, UPS spends $220 million in Alaska each year to run our operations. These dollars are spent in the form of fuel for our vehicles, maintenance, and housekeeping services. When you add up all those numbers, UPS spends approximately $328 million each year in Alaska, not to mention millions more in one-time capital expenditures for our buildings and equipment. In addition to the investments the Alaskan government has made at Ted Stevens International Airport, UPS, too, has invested nearly $50 million in infrastructure in Anchorage in recent years. In 2008, we opened our multi-million dollar pilot training center here in Anchorage. It's the main training facility for our 747 and MD-11 crews based in Anchorage. Hundreds of our pilots train there each year, and many spend over a month at a time in classrooms and in Anchorage hotels and restaurants. As a matter of fact, late last year, I spent approximately 2 months training on the 747-400 myself here. Our airline has operated in Anchorage for almost 20 years now, and we have grown into the top carrier at Anchorage in terms of landed weight. Over the last 3 years, we have generated an average of $4.4 million each year in landing fees. We have grown our Anchorage pilot base from 55 pilots in 2007, when we opened it, to 500 pilots in 2010, even allowing for the recession. And we plan to continue growing our Anchorage domicile, and I think this is an important fact for everybody to note. By the end of 2010, we'll transfer another 50 pilots from other locations to handle re-emerging growth in our Asia business. These 50 extra pilots will come from excess throughout the rest of our system. In addition, we will add 75 new jobs for package handlers as well out of our gateway operations. Also, UPS pays $2 million to Alaska each year in property, fuel, unemployment, and hotel taxes. We are proud of our role as an economic engine in Alaska, just as we are proud of our role as a good corporate citizen. As a corporation, just this year, we passed the $1 billion, that's right, $1 billion with a B mark in donations to United Way. UPS Foundation annually donates more than $40 million to charitable organizations, and our employees volunteer hundreds of thousands of hours to worthy causes. These dollars translate and take root in Alaska also. We have a five-figure United Way campaign each year in Anchorage and Alaska combined. And our Alaska employees volunteer thousands of hours at great organizations like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, the Boy Scouts, the American Red Cross, and the Food Bank of Alaska, which I'm familiar with when I came up here late last year and probably sorted about 20,000 pounds of carrots. When Anchorage was faced with a jet fuel shortage earlier this year, UPS chaired the airline committee that worked to solve the crisis. The solution will ultimately create more lucrative jet fuel supplying operations in Alaska. In addition, UPS has helped pioneer next generation aviation safety technology now broadly used in Alaska through the Capstone Project. Further, in a state as beautiful and environmentally friendly and sensitive as Alaska is, we are proud to operate Cargo Aviation's most fuel-efficient air fleet. The 747s, 767s, and NB-11s that transit Anchorage operate within the strictest international noise standards. Economically and socially, UPS is good for Alaska. We've been here for many years, and we plan to be here for many more years to come. We recognize that one of your goals as a state is to grow jobs, and it's important that employees who work in Alaska also live here. As we've grown the Anchorage domicile, it is also important to UPS. And in fact, although we are not contractually obligated to do so, we provided additional financial incentives for pilots to move up to Anchorage. I'd like to speak to the facts of our pilot furlough. First, and I think it's a common theme throughout these discussions this morning, this is the last thing we really want to do, is be talking about furloughs. It's a very difficult situation for our furlough crew members and certainly for their families. And we keep them in our thoughts and some of us in our prayers daily. It's also a difficult decision for the company and not one we take lightly. This is the first time UPS has had to furlough pilots. Before we go any further, I think it's important that we all understand exactly what the meaning furlough translates to in this situation here. And it tends to cause some confusion as there's been a lot of media interest in this. But in the airline industry, a furlough is a layoff or temporary separation from the company. It's not a permanent separation. We fully expect to recall all of the furloughed pilots in the future. Some of you may still wonder, why is Anchorage in the middle of this private business decision? It has to do with the furlough process in the collective bargaining agreement with the Independent Pilots Association.
Captain, can you speak a little bit louder?
You bet. The furlough is being carried out. Is that good?
Yes, that's much better.
I can speak louder. The furlough is being carried out by reverse union seniority, and Anchorage is our newest and most junior pilot domicile. It just so happens that most of our pilots with the least seniority are assigned here, so they are the first to be furloughed. However, it's important to understand that the furlough does not reduce the number of UPS pilots assigned to Anchorage. Anchorage will not lose jobs. Every junior crew member furloughed is being replaced by a more senior pilot from within our network. As I mentioned earlier, we are actually growing in Anchorage, adding flights, crew members, and package handlers. Our pilots who are newly assigned to Anchorage are being offered relocation packages, meaning the company will pay for them to move to Alaska if they so choose. And although that is a personal choice, since pilots historically live in places other than where they work or are domiciled, we currently have 28 new relocations to Anchorage in process. And at $32,000 per relocation, there is another $800,000 in UPS dollars that will benefit the economy in Alaska. It is important to understand that the furloughs are temporary. As business conditions allow, we plan to bring our crew members back to UPS. Many of them will return to duty in Anchorage. You should also be aware the UPS pilot furlough is not taking place in a vacuum. Virtually every employee group at UPS has been impacted by the severe recession over the last 2 years. The economic downturn forced UPS to make a series of difficult but prudent business decisions. Our pilot furlough was one of many cost-cutting measures. In addition to the furlough, we retired aging aircraft. We significantly reduced our capital expenditures. We froze management pay for 1 year, and we have and continue to suspend the 401k match for all our management folks. We've reorganized our ground package operations from 46 major operating units down to 20 operating units, and we've eliminated 1,100 management jobs. So yes, I would say without a doubt, everybody is sacrificing at UPS. As the recession abates, we're in a recovery mode at UPS. Packages are returning. For example, during our recent second quarter review, we noted a 40% increase in our Asia export business, which is one of the reasons we were able to add jobs in Anchorage. At UPS, the equation is simple. Packages equal jobs, which is why we've been able to reduce the furlough from 300 to 230 crew members, effective in 2011. We are pleased to preserve crew member jobs. And quite frankly, these are great people, and they do very important work, and we're proud of them. And we remain hopeful that business conditions will continue to improve, and we'll be able to reduce that furlough number even further. But we also remain cautious. Economic indicators continue to provide very mixed signals. Employment, housing, and GDP numbers remain weak and very unpredictable. Even as business comes back, our revenues and daily shipping numbers remain at pre-recession levels. But regardless of the economy, the conditions that are driving the furloughs still exist. We are flying 48 fewer aircraft than we were in 2003. We have permanently retired three-person aircraft in favor of larger, more efficient, two-person aircraft. At one time, our classic airplanes, the 727, DC-8, and 747-100s accounted for 400 flight engineers for whom there is no longer a need. The FAA's age 2007 age 65 ruling has kept 200 pilots on the payroll who previously would have been required to retire at age 60. And finally, we are flying approximately 10% fewer block hours, or essentially the amount of time a pilot spends in the air, than we were in 2007, prior to the major impact of the recession. The bottom line is that we still have more pilots than we need to operate our airline. At this point in the testimony, I'd like to take a few minutes to set the record straight on the history of the events that have brought us here today. UPS never wanted to furlough. We understand its impact on our people. Many of our pilots and airline managers have experienced furloughs at other carriers before coming to UPS, and we all know the pain. So we worked hard to avert it. Union leaders were not interested in contractual cost reductions to avoid a furlough, like foregoing wage increases. But the union agreed to work with UPS on a voluntary savings through a program that would allow crew members to work part-time, take short or long-term leave of absences, or military leaves. UPS also offered an enhanced early retirement option, an option to forfeit accrued sick leave. As part of the process, UPS and the union agreed upon required saving numbers that UPS pilots had to achieve. The savings were identified on an annual basis for years 2009, 10, in 2011, and that number totaled $131 million. These numbers are contained in the memorandum of understanding that the committee members received last week. The union opened up a volunteer period in the spring of 2009. Their initial efforts to obtain volunteer savings fell short of the identified savings requirements. UPS could have furloughed then. We did not. Instead, we agreed with the association to delay the furlough until January 2010. In return for a commitment from the union that they would reach the savings required through a second round of bidding late in 2009, the union agreed to these terms. The second agreement is contained in the addendum to the MOU that the committee received from UPS. The union conducted the second volunteer period in late 2009, and the results were still short of the agreed-upon requirement of $131 million. At this point, we had delayed the furlough for almost a year, even though the union never produced the savings they initially agreed upon. But even then, UPS did not move forward with the furlough. Rather, we entered into talks with the union's newly elected leader, Captain Bob Thrush. By now, we were in January 2010 when we received an updated business plan. This new plan showed that market conditions were worsening and that the recession had become more severe. As a result, the new business plan indicated that pilot overstaffing situation would extend beyond the 3 years we initially anticipated, 2009 through 2011. We believe the union needed to be aware of these facts as they related to the potential furloughs of post-2011. And this is where the talk about a new number or bait and switch comes from. There was never a new number associated with avoiding furloughs through 2011. The number remained $131 million that they had to achieve. And the truth is, if the union had been able to meet the original agreed upon numbers, and this is according to the MOU, there would not have been a furlough through 2011. It is also worth noting that the union itself agreed on multiple occasions that their own analysis reflected that UPS had more than 400 excess crew members. We never pursued furloughing more than 300, and now have reduced that number to 230. Throughout the period of our furlough version talks, the union consistently agreed that the company was overstaffed. It was just a matter of generating savings necessary to avoid the furlough. Union leaders only started publicly attacking the underlying need for the furlough after they failed to achieve the agreed-upon savings target. Let me share one additional critical point about this, and it was actually briefed earlier. UPS offered repeatedly to accept the savings generated from the voluntary efforts of our crew members to mitigate the number of crew members who would have been furloughed. We were trying to save as many jobs as possible. However, union leaders repeatedly took an all-or-nothing stance to the savings program. They refused to allow us to realize the partial voluntary savings and conduct a much smaller furlough. If the union leaders would have agreed to the approach we suggested, the vast majority of the furloughs would not have occurred. So we found ourselves at a crossroads in January 2010 with a worsening economic forecast, having excess crew members for an extended period of time, and an MOU process that failed to produce the savings required to avoid a furlough through 2011. And I might add, we had 240 pilots that were still sitting on holding assignments on the DC-8 airplane that we retired, that were drawing full pay and benefits, although we didn't have an airplane for them to fly. Make no mistake, let me back up here. We needed to realize the required savings, and with union leaders unwilling to consider wage and benefit changes, unable to meet the voluntary savings goals, and unwilling to accept partial savings, We had no choice but to proceed with the furlough in May of 2010. Make no mistake, the furlough is truly unfortunate, but it was absolutely necessary to maintain the health of our business. We began the furlough in May 2010, and to date we have furloughed 109 pilots. If I can just take the next moment or so, I'd like to break down the furlough numbers. System-wide, we expect to furlough 230 pilots, and if business conditions continue to improve, we hope to further reduce that number. 197 of those pilots are assigned to Anchorage operations. That means they fly out of here, but may not choose to live in Anchorage. According to our records, 71 of the 197 have chosen to become Anchorage residents or Alaska residents. And 28 of our newly reassigned Anchorage pilots are in the process of moving to Alaska. And as I indicated earlier, by the end of 2010, we will transfer another 50 pilots from other locations to Anchorage to handle reemerging growth in our Asia business. And we'll add 75 new jobs for package handlers as well. We anticipate a number of those pilots will reside in Anchorage as well. From an economic impact perspective, there may be some loss as a result of the furloughs. That is certainly regrettable, but any attempt to assess this number is purely speculative. We appreciate the Department of Labor's support as we work toward the goal to help our furloughed employees obtain other gainful employment in this difficult time. Again, this loss is unfortunate for our impacted employees. But for the purposes of today's hearing, we need to put this number in economic perspective. As I stated earlier, UPS spends $328 million each year in Alaska to run our operations. Once again, $108 million is salary and $220 million is operating dollars. In the final analysis, both Alaska and UPS have benefited from this partnership. Looking to the future, UPS remains focused on ensuring the long-term strength of the company and seizing the growth opportunities in Alaska and all over the globe. That concludes my prepared comments for today, and I hope you now have a better understanding of the facts that brought us here today, the valid reasons behind our furlough, and UPS's role as an economic engine in Alaska. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Lynn has a question.
Thank you very much, sir, for your comments. I want to commend you and the company for all the many good things you do for Alaska, the charities, and so on. But that, good as that is, that doesn't really speak to the issue we're trying to address here today, but it's commendable. A couple of things. You helped relocate these pilots up here. Many of them bought homes in an uncertain market at best, and if they move outside, they're probably going to have to rent, and more likely sell these homes, but you have new pilots coming up. Is there any coordination on that where you, one, maybe help these furloughed pilots, you help them relocate up, help them relocate back outside someplace, and maybe coordinate with the new older higher seniority pilots moving up here to buy some of the homes that these folks are forced into selling?
Actually, I think there's about two or three questions in there. First of all, we are paying for moves for the pilots that are coming up here to replace the pilots. We have not explored the possibility of those pilots looking into opportunities of other pilots that own property up here. Certainly something we would be more than happy to do. Actually, it's a pretty good idea. Kind of wonder why we didn't think about that. Secondly, one of the things that we've done over and above the contract, cushion the economic impact of the pilots are actually being furloughed. Pilots that have accrued a great deal of sick time in their sick banks, we're paying that out to them so they might help deal with some of the economic challenges they have. And in most cases, it's a sum around $20,000.
Follow-up, Representative Lynn.
Which is good if you don't get sick in the meantime. But are you going to pay any of the relocation expenses back outside for any of these people? You brought them up here.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair. The contract does not provide for that, and right now we're abiding by the contract.
Just a couple more, Madam Chair.
Okay, follow-up, Representative Flynn.
Who makes the decisions on what's done and is not done in regards particularly to these furloughs, whether you do it or not furlough anymore? Who's the decision-maker on the management side?
I think it's a very collaborative decision. We look all the way up and down from a financial aspect, a economic aspect. Ultimately, I'm a major decision maker there, and the president of the airline is also a part of it.
You said you're a major decision maker.
Correct.
And just without denigrating your role whatsoever, I'm sure you do a great job in UPS management. I believe your top man is Scott Davis, is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct, sir.
This is a pretty important deal, not only to the pilots, but also to the economy of Alaska, especially Anchorage. What happened to Mr. Davis couldn't come up here and talk to the committee directly? He's probably the chief negotiator, one might say. He'll probably be the one who says yay or nay to anything.
Representative Lynn, I gave each group the choice of who they wanted to represent their group, and so I don't think we need to question why they picked who they did.
If you care to answer, fine. If not, that's okay.
I think we'll let the question stand.
I have a question if there's not any others. The question I would like to ask you is that were the Anchorage pilots targeted for the furlough?
Madam Chair, absolutely not. The contract and the reduction in force language that is part of the contract governs everything we do in terms of a reduction in force. We call it a bid. So absolutely no target there.
So
did I answer that?
So in other words, you didn't have a choice in who you were going to lay off?
Madam Chair, that's correct. As there was time spent earlier today, it's association, it's a collective bargaining agreement that we have agreed to with the pilot association, and everything is based on seniority, everything from bidding to reduction in force, and we strictly have to follow the contract. There are no leeways in that area.
And I think from what we heard earlier is that each of the pilots that came up here to live knew that when they came up here. And unfortunately, nobody could foresee a recession nationwide or worldwide, actually, would happen. So, but they were aware of it when they came?
They certainly were aware that we have language in the contract that deals with reduction in force. And that as a junior pilot, it's common industry knowledge that if there is a need to reduce the workforce, then they would be the first to go. So, yes, they would know that.
Any other questions from anyone?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Tammy Wilson.
Thank you. Yeah, I have one question. Did UPS receive any incentives to move their operation to Alaska?
Through the chair, I have no knowledge if we did receive incentives. I cannot answer that question.
Follow up,
Tammy.
Would you be able to provide that to us? Because I think it's great what you've done and the money you put in, but that seems to be one of the questions of whether or not there's any kind of incentives that you were given to move here.
We'd be more than happy to provide you that through the chair.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Stock, you had a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. Thank you. I know there were some hard economic times in 08, and has UPS been able to override that, or is UPS facing harder economic times currently? Because you said that your furlough decision is based on what's happening now. How are the revenues back in 08 for UPS versus what you're facing now?
Through the chair, as I stated in my remarks, we're still at revenues and levels that were pre-recession. So we have not seen a major rebound, with the exception of Asia. We're seeing strong growth coming out of Asia. I can say we're very cautious based on what happens with the supply chain and ocean freight and other forms and modes of transportation, how that's going to impact us going down the road. So the U.S. is a very mature market. We're very flat there. And Europe is also an area that, being a global company, that we're not seeing a lot of growth there, albeit we are seeing some.
Follow-up, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So your revenues are down now than they were pre-recession? Is that what I'm hearing?
Revenues still have not come to the level that they were pre-recession. That's correct.
Okay, Madam Chair, may I supplement that answer?
State your name, please.
Scott Casey from UPS. Representative Tuck, and through the chair, I do want to underscore an important point as we talk about this furlough situation, which is that there were several primary drivers that led us down this road, and a couple of them had no direct connection to the economic times that evolved over the past couple of years. For example, the FAA's increase to the mandatory retirement age from age 60 to age 65 led to approximately 200 excess crew members on our payroll. So I do want to underscore that point because I think it's important to keep in mind that there were non-economic factors such as the age 65 rule and such as the retirement of our older, less efficient 3-pilot aircraft in favor of newer, more fuel efficient and more environmentally friendly 2-pilot aircraft.
Representative Tuck.
I think, Madam Chair, so it sounds like that, as Mr. Barr pointed out earlier, you just have more pilots than you need.
Through the chair, that would be an accurate statement.
I have a question. The pilots that we're getting extra in up here in Alaska, we're getting an extra 50 more pilots and 75 workers. They aren't new pilots. You're going to bring them from various states in the lower 48 and bring them to Alaska?
That's correct. We actually, Madam Chair, we have domiciles in Miami, Florida. Louisville, of course, is our largest domicile. And we also have a smaller domicile in Ontario, California. So the recession's really impacted the whole global scale of our operations. So we will take excess pilots that aren't needed in those domiciles that are more senior to pilots currently based in Anchorage, and we'll bring those pilots up here.
Okay, thank you. Senator Davis.
Yes. You mentioned that, first of all, you had an agreement. The agreement that you had with the pilots was strictly here in Anchorage, right? They agreed to that $1.3 million that they paid towards the amount of money that they were going to raise. That was an agreement strictly here in Anchorage with the Pilots Association?
Senator Davis, through the chair, it was really a system-wide pilot agreement to come up with $131 million in savings. So the association, through the agreement with the company, looked to all 2,800 pilots to come up with savings. So it wasn't exclusive to the pilots in Anchorage. It was a organization-wide pilot agreement.
And could I continue?
Follow up, Representative Davis.
At the time that you made that agreement and then you extended it for them, and they did raise a portion of money, and they were saying that's money you had right up front and you could use it now, and the layoff is delayed because you are saying now you've only laid off 121, was it, out of the 300 that you had hoped to lay off?
109.
And what pushed you to the point where you felt you had to lay off the pilots? And that was going to have an impact right here in Anchorage, because you said they were the junior pilots,
mm-hmm.
because it was the last station that was planted here in Alaska. So all the senior people are in other places like Louisville and whatever place you have.
Mm-hmm.
You knew that was going to have quite of an impact on Anchorage itself, because you had those pilots here that was less seniority. Did you not?
Senator Davis, for the chair, yes, we knew there was going to be a significant impact, in particular, on the pilots in Anchorage. There was no doubt about that, because when we took a look at all the seniority lists and we looked at all the current, in this case, first officers assigned to Anchorage, the major impact was going to be in Anchorage. But by virtue of the agreement we have on the collective bargaining agreement and the contract, as a corporation, we had no leeway. And with the fact that we went through not just one and not just two, but even gave the new president some time when he came into office, times to generate the $131 million, we actually came to a crossroads because we needed to put some pilots to work, quite frankly. They were sitting around and been sitting around for almost a year, not doing anything other than drawing a salary. So as unfortunate as it was, and certainly the fact is Anchorage definitely was the most impacted, and that's the unfortunate part about the for the community here.
All right, thank you.
From what I hear, what you're saying is that you actually, instead of furloughing people, there was a whole year that there were pilots that weren't doing anything, but yet you still paid them?
Madam Chair, we had, as I stated in my prepared remarks, we retired the DC-8 fleet, and this was right in the midst of the economic downturn. We did not need the lift provided by the DC-8s. They were also one of our older aircraft, so we retired that fleet, and as we were working through the MOU with the pilot group, we had 240 pilots, give or take, a couple here and there, that were assigned to the DC-8 fleet, but we really didn't have an airplane to fly them to fly. We purposely made a conscious decision not to train those pilots on another airplane, because depending on which you were going to go down, either the furlough path or was the MOU going to work, then there's a completely different set of rules that are outlined in the contract. So we had to wait and find out, was the MOU going to work or not? So, and you are correct. We still have a handful of pilots assigned to the DC-8. Since all of 09 and now that are being paid that aren't producing anything.
Representative Tuck, you had a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Is UPS open to third-party arbitration in trying to resolve coming up with concessions as well as being able to keep pilots employed?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, the challenge there is our pilot group and
basically the airline is under the umbrella, if you will, of the National Mediation Board under the Rail Labor Act. So if there was an opportunity to mediate or to come to some kind of agreement, my suggestion would be that would be the group that we would go to. And I think we're certainly open to other opportunities out there.
Follow up, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And under what conditions do you see that pilots be able to return back to work or be able to avoid the furlough? Under what conditions is UPS seeking?
The conditions?
Yeah, whether it's economic or whether it's what would make it work for UPS?
Sure.
You know what, that's one thing that I kind of would like to make a comment, because that's almost negotiations, and those are usually done in private. So I think that we need to know that they're willing to do it, or that, but I don't think we need to go into areas that is usually done behind closed doors. So, but anyway. Representative, do you have anything else, Representative?
No, thank you.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking at some information the committee was given, and it said that there were more takeoffs taking place in a week in July, a dozen more than there were during the week 2 months earlier in May. And my question is, if you're having additional departures, that means business must have picked up, and so if this business is picking up, why do you think you still need to lay pilots off?
Scott Casey from UPS, and Representative Peterson through the chair. There are a number of factors that led to this furlough, some of which have nothing to do with the economic recession or package volume levels. And in answering a question that Representative Tuck asked a few minutes ago, I highlighted a couple of those factors, such as the increase in the age of the mandatory retirement for pilots from age 60 to age 65, and the retirement of our older aircraft, which required 3-person crews in exchange for newer aircraft that only require 2-person crews. There is no question that the economy is a factor in the situation that we are facing. It was very much an exacerbating factor that influenced our longer-term view of the cost savings required through the year 2015. So I don't want to dismiss the economy as a factor in its entirety. However, there are other factors that created a significant excess in crew members that are not directly connected to the recession.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Groomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to ask you, with the chair's permission, a series of questions here. I'd like to start with the follow-up to question Representative Tuck asked a minute ago, and that I explored with the folks from the IPA. Recognizing that this particular union is under the Railway Labor Act, and that the ALPA unions and the other airlines are under the Fair Labor Practices Act, the NLRB, I thought they were. No, they're not. Everybody's under the Railway Act. Oh, okay, sorry. Recognizing, yes, please, go ahead, with the chair's permission.
Scott Casey from UPS, and Representative Groomberg through the chair. What I want to clarify is that all airlines fall under the Railway Labor Act.
Thank you. My information was obviously wrong.
Representative Bloomberg.
Thank you. I'm trying to formulate my question not quickly but properly. And I would ask both sides in this. Since federal law provides a mediation board and a procedure, and both of you have generally indicated
at least not total resistance to that idea. And with a recollection of the admonition of several of the members of the committee that we usually don't get into this in our oversight, but understanding that we all, as Anchorage representatives, all of us, as all Alaskan representatives, we all represent Alaska, and as Americans, we all have an interest in helping resolve any kind of a controversy. Would you folks, and I'm going to then ask the other folks too, be willing to consider using the offices of that federal board to continue your discussions and attempt to try to solve some of these problems? And I don't need an answer now, because I don't want to get into anything that's...
Yeah, I don't want us to go there, because that's something that is usually done. You know, we don't want to tell them what to do.
May I just ask it a little differently with your permission?
I'll try it and see.
Yeah. if you feel comfortable, I would encourage you folks to see what you can use to try to solve that. You folks have any comments? You don't need to. Okay.
Representative Grinberg, through the chair, I would acknowledge your comments and suggestions, and we will certainly take those comments under advisement.
Well, that's fair enough, and I would encourage both parties to do that, because jaw is better than war, to coin a phrase. Am I correct that that UPS had discontinued the company's matching of employee United Way donations, or they have done that now?
That's Madam Chair, Representative Grinberg. Not to my knowledge, we still match.
And most of the laid-off pilots in the Anchorage area have already given UPS their sick time as part of the voluntary reduction. So the company's allowing them to cash out their sick time is not particularly significant now. Am I correct in that statement?
Through the chair. Actually, what we've done with sick leave is over and above the contract. Now it's earned sick leave that our UPS pilots have accrued. However, in a situation of furlough, the contract does not address paying it out at this time. It would be paid out, I think it's paid out in a retirement, once you retire, things like that. But we went over and above the contract as a company and said, listen, on a voluntary basis, if you have monies in your sick leave account, and you would like access to that money, a percentage, 0% to 100%, we will allow you to do that, and we'll pay it out in very short order after your furlough.
And I asked if there had been basically a change in president or in UPS, and I was told that the gentleman who was named was still the president.
Mr. Leekheitz?
Yeah, Leekheitz. Was it correct that he still is? Because you sounded to me that you, a minute ago, said there had been a change or something.
Through the chair, if I said there was a change, I'm not sure in what you were referring to, but...
It was the
Pilots
Association
Mr. Leekheitz still remains the president of the airline.
I don't have any more questions right now. Oh, I do. I'm sorry.
One more, Representative Grunberg.
They're used to my trying their patience. I appreciate your I'm looking at a letter that we all got dated August the 20th, and it was signed from Bruce McRae, the West Regional Public Affairs Manager, at the bottom of page one. It is also, and if I may read, Madam Chair, It's also important to understand that the furloughs are temporary. But I thought that some of these furloughs could last as long as 5 years. Do you consider that temporary?
Through the chair, I consider it temporary, but at 5 years, it's a lengthy furlough, no question about it.
Thank you. I don't have anything further.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Representative Johnson.
I'm sure there's a question in here somewhere. I want to kind of bring this back to the legitimate policy decisions and the purview of the legislature. To me, this is about a local hire issue. This is about jobs for Alaskans and jobs for citizens, and particularly my constituents. The message that I want you to have, we're dealing with a big pipeline coming up. We want those people to consider local hire. We want UPS to consider local hire. We want Alaskans at the front of the line when the jobs come. We have Alaskans that are going to clearly lose their jobs for good reasons, not good reasons. That's a business decision. The purview of this committee, and it should be the purview of every legislative committee, not just this one, and something that we should pay particular attention to is hiring Alaskans. So in the future, I'm pleased with the encouragement of the 50-plus people that you're encouraged to move to Alaska, but every business that does business in Alaska that's headquartered outside of Alaska should have local hire and hiring Alaskans as one of their top priorities. And when they don't, I think every business should expect the Labor and Commerce Committee, the Resource Committee, the Finance Committee, every committee that we have in the legislature to stand up and take notice. And I think that's the purpose here, and that's the message that UPS, I hope, walks away from. I hope that's the message that the Pilots Associations walks away from, is that we care about jobs for Alaskans. I spend probably 80% of my day either trying to build jobs for Alaska, keep jobs in Alaska, to bring business to this state. And when I see jobs leaving Alaska, that concerns me. And I think it is an absolute legitimate policy and oversight of the legislature. Anytime there are jobs not being done here, we spend hours on oil companies on the North Slope not hiring Alaskans. And they have a great track record. We've just started here. But for me to ignore a non-local hire, and I'm not sure I characterize it the same as our Senator Begich's outsourcing of jobs. I see that the jobs are being replaced. I get all that.
And I don't think we can say it's non-local hire. They are limited under their contract.
Well, I understand that. But it is, when I bring it back to the purview, I think we know that now better than we did when this meeting started, Madam Chair. So I don't disagree with that, but it is a local hire issue, in my opinion, which I think is definitely in the purview of the legislature, will continue to be. And the day it's not, we all should be replaced. Madam Chair.
Representative Lynn.
I'd like to underline everything that Representative Craig Johnson just said, and he kind of stole my thunder there at the end, which he has a habit of doing because he's very good at business and so on. But there is an issue of outsourcing when you bring these other good folks up from outside. You know, highly qualified pilots, a lot of seniority and so on, but it's still outside coming in rather than the local hires. Where it is outsourcing, and we need to keep that to bare necessity.
Representative Groomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Somebody mentioned that to save costs, the company was starting to hire foreign contract carriers to carry cargo. Is that just between foreign ports, or does that include in and out of the United States?
Through the chair, that was a statement made by the Pilot Association in reference to some discussions that took place in negotiations. I don't remember being involved in those. I know we were looking for opportunities overseas, but we are not outsourcing pilot jobs, and we're very proud of the work our pilots do flying all around the world. And where we have the route authority right now, the pilots are flying all those routes.
Madam Chair, so
follow up, Representative.
So your crews are American.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I would like to, Madam Chair, just follow up on Representative Lenz and Representative Johnson's statement. I consider myself somewhat Alaskan. I've been coming up the southeast for 25 years. I had a family member that taught school down there for 25 years. My mother spent the last years of her life up here, and we realize, and I realize, why we want to, you know, take advantage of folks up here in Alaska and everything it has to offer. So appreciate those comments.
Okay, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this isn't easy. I mean, it's a troubling situation. And I don't mean to be asking a line of questions. You know, I'd like to try to solve problems, and I see some proud pilots that are wearing UPS uniform very proudly. Decisions like this are never easy. And I know the state has a limited role, actually probably has really no role in this situation. But unfortunately, it's my nature to try to bring things together. I'm still hopeful that there might be some sort of resolution in the future. And I appreciate both co-chairs for holding this hearing, giving us a clear understanding of what's happening, what's not happening, and what the impact and what the situation is for families and for Alaskans. And I do appreciate the comments earlier. You know, it's about jobs and sitting here in the hearings, you know, we don't want to see jobs being lost either. And so it's just, but I appreciate everybody's testimony. I appreciate the Pilots Association being here in force, you know, expressing their concerns, and I appreciate you guys bringing forward your comments.
And what I'm going to do right now is Bill Trent would like to have 3 or 4 minutes. And so if you would like to come up for 3 or 4 minutes and kind of just pull things together, and then I'll give the other side the same opportunity.
Madam Chair, this is Representative Wilson. I have one last question, if I could quickly.
Representative Tammy Wilson.
Sorry, I had my hand up, but nobody could see it. I was just wondering, you know, because we were talking about local hire, could they tell me how many pilots currently working in the Anchorage area were Alaska residents to start with?
Through the chair, I don't have an accurate number on that, and I couldn't. This is Rick Barr.
Go ahead.
I don't have a number for you. I know there were several people. I don't know if it's in the 5 to 20 number that lived in Alaska prior to putting the domicile out here. Certainly a number we can get to you if that's required.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Trent?
Seth Bob Thrush, President of the Independent Pilots Association. That was Representative Wilson, I believe, that asked that question. Our numbers show, I'm not sure exactly what she was asking, but our numbers show that currently we have 155 crew members that live in the Anchorage area. Was that what she was asking?
She was wondering how many lived here before this all came about.
Okay, that was correct. It was about, it was somewhere between 17 and 20. I don't remember the specific number. I just had two clarifications, if I may, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
In Mr. Barr's testimony, he talked about the sick leave and what they're paying out, and I just want to make sure that everybody understands most of these junior crew members were the most affected. They gave the most in the original sign-ups and the original volunteers. Very few of them had more than even half of their normal accrued sick leave. He said that, you know, they could get up to over 20,000. They could, but very few of them even got half of that amount if they chose to take their sick leave. I mean, they just didn't have much left because a lot of them gave at least half of it back during the voluntary portion. Those most affected by this were the ones that gave the most during the voluntary time. And I would Madam Chair, if I may, I would like to address one thing that Representative Tuck asked. Through the chair to Representative Tuck, the company's second quarter profits, they reported were up over 70% year over year, and they made $1.3 billion operating profit last quarter. So the profits are up significantly. Revenues are up. They may be at pre-recession numbers, but they're pretty close to going past those numbers, if not already in the very near future. So I just thought I would like to address that. I'll turn it over to Mr. Trent. Thank you.
Okay, 3 minutes.
I know we're approaching the noon hour, and I'll make this short. Absolutely respect and appreciate working with Rick Ball all these years and also Scott Casey, and did actually agree with many of the things Rick had to say. Though I think a couple things need to be said. It was not just a case of the pilots not making this $131 million and finally the company just kind of had to throw up their hands and go away. That's not what happened. What happened was the company agreed to a second sign-up period, which could have generated 100% of that money. But before we ever knew, in December of 2009, before we ever knew what the results of that second sign-up was, the company came to us and changed the number. So what we were told was, even if you make the $131 million, it won't make any difference because there's a new number, $245. And so we came back and said, hey, give us those opportunities that I'd outlined in my statement. They said no to that. So I wanted to be real clear. The second thing, you know, Mr. Casey, I think very accurately said there were a lot of elements going into the company feeling that they had more pilots than they needed. He was absolutely right. The FAA did change the retirement age, but that was in 2007. You know, the company didn't come to us and say, well, we need to furlough after that change in 2007. The retirement of these aging aircraft has been going on for years. The company knew all that, didn't come to us, you know, with a furlough at that point. That only happened, the company coming to us after, you know, the economic downturn in early 2009. And even then, just to reiterate, they said they did not want to furlough. So that is absolutely not what we're talking about. We're talking about hard, cold cash. And we, as a union, instead of taking an adversarial approach, we took a cooperative approach. And we've tried to stay on that path. And I think both parties may have gotten off a little track. But we appreciate the scrutiny that the committee's given to this issue, and we think that we will benefit from that scrutiny. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I guess what I would like to say, I thank everyone for coming today. We've heard both sides, and I think that obviously both sides have a little different point of view, and I think that there's nothing that we can do about that. We've gotten the facts, and the facts have been skirted around a little bit, I would say, but I have felt that there's not anything that we as legislators can do unless we maybe make some changes to our statutes and our regulations to make a difference when people come into this state. However, our Constitution doesn't allow us very much latitude in that area, and so we're kind of locked in a lot of ways also. And I understand when there are union issues involved and there are contracts that are signed and sealed, that many times there aren't options except to follow those contract negotiations that happened before all this took place. I feel that we have a company that is wise in their business decisions, as many companies across the United States have had to do during this recession. That doesn't mean that they're not still making money, but it means that they have to look at what's going on, and they have to try to figure out, okay, how long is this going to last? You know, where's our profit coming from? How are we going to juggle things around to make it so that we're still profitable to our stockholders, but also to our workers? And every company in America knows that jobs come from business. And I think that the business has tried to make some good decisions here, and I'm I feel bad that you guys were locked in so that there wasn't a lot of wiggle room for what happened as far as who was going to get the what we call in the education world the pink slips. And so anyway, I appreciate it. I hope that you can all go back and both sides rethink where you're at and maybe allow some more flexibility. It's not the country that we live in and the world that we live in is not the same world that we lived in 5 years ago. It's a huge difference. And I think that workers across our nation and across our world are realizing that things have changed, and we have to change a little bit with it. So thank you so much for coming. I hope that you can you can all get together and maybe come to some different conclusions than what is right now. But, and I do, if anybody wants to make some closing statements here, I would like to keep it to like two or three sentences. So I will give the opportunity for anybody here to make any comments that they would like. Senator Davis.
Thank you. I want to thank you for holding the hearing of the House Transportation Committee. I think that we have done, accomplished something here. And I don't want to go down saying that we don't have a role, because we have a role to find out things that we need to know, get clarification of issues. No, I don't want to sit at the bargaining table, but I do like to know as much as I can about the situation that we have here. And I know that you are wanting to close this out, but that $245 million figure target something. The Pilots Association said they couldn't go there. The other side said that we have to have this money. I don't believe even at this point you've reached that $245 million with your layoffs. Am I correct in that, or am I wrong?
You know, thank you for
I need an answer to that.
You can ask. You can ask that very shortly, okay? Anybody else? Representative Lynn.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you, Representative Wilson, Chair of the Transportation Committee. I'm not on the Transportation Committee. I'm Chair of the House State Affairs Committee. And, of course, the situation we have here is a state affair, because it affects the economy so much, and affects, people who live here. Just one quickie. We're talking about sick time. And I think sick time for pilots sometimes might be a little bit different than requiring sick time for the rest of us, because when pilots fly, you can get your station tubes all stopped up, and it forces up into your sinuses. As a nurse, you know this. And so sometimes a pilot will have to take sick time when the rest of us will not have to take sick time. So that's pretty good. But again, I'd like to thank everybody for showing up here today, and I do think it was productive. And thank you for inviting me to participate in your committee.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciated your courtesy in having Senator Davis's question answered. I wonder if we could have that question answered now. Would you give a minute so that they could answer the question, please?
We'll answer that question. We'll get the answer to that in just a short.
Thank you. I'm fine.
Anybody else?
Jobs.
It is all about jobs. And does somebody want to answer that question? I really feel that we already answered it once, but answer it again, because I got the answer before, but go ahead.
Scott Casey from UPS. Senator Davis through the chair. The $244 million figure that you referenced is a cost savings figure through 2015. So I want to reiterate a couple of key points that Captain Barr made in his testimony about that number. First, the required savings in order to avoid a furlough through 2011 never changed. It remained $131 million. As the economy worsened and we continued to evaluate the financial affairs of the global economy and translate those into our company's needs to maintain the health of our business, we realized that the total savings that we would need extended out to 2015. But in many ways, that didn't impact the decision that was made at the conclusion of our discussions with the IPA, because the IPA never produced the savings required to avoid a furlough through 2011.
Thank you very much. And having said all that, this meeting is adjourned.